Well, good morning. My name is Ben. I'm the lead pastor here at CORE. And like Josh said, we are so incredibly excited that you guys are here with us on this Labor Day weekend. I have no idea what your life, your family, your schedule looks like on holiday weekends like this, but I know what mine looks like. And on a weekend that's supposed to be a holiday, we take the initiative to see how many things we can cram in to one weekend to absolutely exhaust us so that we need a holiday from our holiday. And you see, I point that out because what I recognize is this, and we talk about this every single weekend around here because we get it and we understand it. That whether you're here for the very first time or you're checking us out online or you're giving church a try again after being gone for a really long time, or maybe you're sitting there and you call CORE home and you find yourself in that exact same seat almost every single weekend, man, we just want you to know how incredibly privileged we count ourselves that you have chosen to take an hour out of your weekend and especially this crazy weekend to be here with us. And this weekend, we are beyond excited because we believe with all of our heart, no matter what category you fall into, that today you are not here by accident. That for each and every one of us, there is something incredible that is going to rise to the surface as we dive into our fourth and final part of this series that we've been in called I'm In. A series that revolves around two words that on one hand carry such incredible weight because no matter what facet of life we utter those two words in, it can be incredibly difficult for us to say that. It carries with it all sorts of weight and all sorts of expectations and requires a degree of courage from us to be able to say, I'm in. But on the other hand, two words that we believe with all of our heart carry immense potential to change our lives, to change our futures, and to change the trajectory of our faith. You see, throughout this series, we've been challenging every single one of us to be able to be I'm in within our lives, within our faith, for the sake of our future. To be able to take steps of courage that ultimately we believe can change the direction of our lives and ultimately allow us to begin experiencing a richer and more satisfying life that the God of the universe wants for you and wants for me. And in saying those two words, what we've been continually communicating is this, is that this series is about something for you, not something from you. And over the course of the first 3 weeks, we've looked at three different ways in which we have an opportunity to say I'm in, that can do just that, change our lives, change our futures, and change the trajectory of our faith, that I'm invited. That wherever you are being invited to more. A God who's in the business of inviting those who others reject. That when you feel as if you're not good enough or you'll never be good enough, a God who's extending a hand to invite you to more. Or if you found yourself doing this Jesus following things for more years than what you care to admit, and you found yourself in this place of complacency where you feel stuck or you feel as if you've done enough, a God who is still inviting you to more, that you are invaluable. Wherever you are invaluable because you have a part to play that nobody else can play. You have something to do that nobody else can do. And the church, the body, isn't whole, isn't complete, isn't as powerful as it was intended to be without you playing your part. Because what we believe with all of our hearts is this, is that somebody, somewhere, is waiting for you to do what only you can do to impact their lives and their eternities. That I'm influential. That wherever you are, you have a circle of influence. You have influence and you were meant to be influenced. No matter how small or large your circle may be, no matter how significant or insignificant that circle feels, that your circle matters. And you were created to make an impact on that circle for the kingdom. But what we also noted last week is this, is that you can't make the full impact with your influence on your circle without being humble enough to also be influenced. To have a circle of people who are pouring into you so that you have something to pour into other people. And today we take the final step of this journey by talking about this concept that we are all being invited to say, I'm invested. That I'm in with my investment. And yet that one word carries with it a lot of weight, doesn't it? You see, when we think of investment, I'm willing to bet that for most of us, our minds go to our future. They go to things like our retirement accounts or maybe the stock market that we're presently investing in. Investments seem to carry with it a significant amount of decision-making, dare I say, that we take a lot of time to decide the things that we invest in, or at least that's the way we've painted in our mind. And yet what I'm willing to bet is that when we look close enough and get honest enough, what we would quickly realize is that there are a whole lot of things that we've invested in our lives without much thought or without much planning. You see, for some of us, the major investment that we've made is that car that's changed your mindset on cars. You know, when you had that old beater and your kids threw up in the back seat, you didn't even care. But now that you invested in the new car, your kids ask you if they can eat in the car, you look into the back seat and you say, "You're lucky I'm letting you breathe in the car. Don't even ask me about eating in the car," and you wrap them in bubble wrap before they get in every single time. Or maybe it's the season tickets that you've invested in. And now because of the investment you've made, you feel like you need to be there, and you even invested in the red and gray RV to show up at the place where you have the season tickets to every single week. Or maybe in your life, football season brings with it fantasy football season, and you have those five different leagues that you're involved in, and have you ever noticed how the ones that you actually pay money to be involved in are the ones that you give the most attention to? Because you're invested into them. Or maybe it was the boat or the RV that you invested into. And you find yourselves, because of the investment that you made, looking at your kids when they say, "Do we have to go to the campground again?" And you look back and you say, "We're going, and you're going to like it." Because there's an investment that's been made here, and we have to get the return on our investment, or it's the traveling team. And now every single weekend is devoted to that because you've invested your time and your money into that for your kids. You see, every single one of us have something in our lives presently that we are invested in. And yet what I'm willing to bet about you is the same thing that I know with absolute certainty about myself, and it's this. The problem that arises with the investments that we have in our lives is that oftentimes we find ourselves investing in things that don't last. We invest in things in our lives with our time and our finances that are dying quicker than what we are. Things we hope when we make the initial investment will lead to the fulfillment that we crave. And initially, it seems like it's providing that fulfillment. But over time, that sense of fulfillment from that investment begins to wear off. The new car loses its shine and quickly loses the new car smell. The RV has become a drain on you and your family, feeling as if you have to go to the campground every single week and you have to maintain it. Or the boat is literally living up to its acronym, "Bust Out Another Thousand." The fantasy football team seems like an investment into somebody else's checking account who's always winning, and that somebody isn't you. Or the season tickets have become something where every season the drive to the stadium seems to get just a little bit longer and a little bit more tedious. But what if? What if we could find something to invest in that mattered? What if we could find something to invest our lives into that lasted? What if we could find something to invest in that actually brought the fulfillment that we crave and desire in our lives? Because the fact of the matter is this: investments aren't a bad thing. In fact, we as humanity were created to invest in things. You see, what I believe with all of my heart is that wherever you are, whoever you are, whatever you're walking through, no matter how young or old you are, wherever you are, you were meant to invest in something. But what's imperative is that with our lives and the investments that we make, we ask the question, are we investing in something that matters? Are we investing in something that makes a difference? Are we investing in something that lasts? Because all too often within my life and most likely within yours, as we find ourselves in investing in things that do not last, that don't make a difference, that fade away as quickly as we do, we find ourselves on this journey in those investments, living a life of disappointment, living a life of regret, living a life financially of things that we can never get back, and wondering why on the other side. But what if our financial lives, our financial futures, based upon the investment choices we make, could be filled with a whole lot less regret and a whole lot more impact, simply by saying, I'm in. And let me just stop and say this before we get too deep into this. You see, oftentimes, I think this is so important for us to stop and make note of. Oftentimes, for us as humanity, we make this sort of correlation, that the size of our investment always dictates the size of the impact. Did you catch that? That the size of the investment will always dictate the size of the impact. And oftentimes, because of that belief, what we believe is that until we can significantly invest in something, it isn't worth investing in because the impact on the other side won't really make a difference. For those of you who are Christ followers, that's not how it works in the kingdom. The size of your investment does not dictate the size of the impact that comes from your investment. It's simply the willingness to invest in something that matters by saying, I'm in with what you've got. You don't have to look any further than the story when Jesus came and he walked on this earth, the story of the woman who walked into the temple. And as she was walking out, all of these people were placing way more money into the plate than what she was. And she had two mites to her name. That's it. And she placed them both in. And Jesus looked at this woman and he said, her investment in the kingdom is greater than all of the rest. That's what it looks like. That's the power of the investment when it comes to our investment in something that matters. It's the reason why this guy that many of us claim to follow had this to say about how we choose our investments. In Matthew's account of the life of Jesus, chapter 6, verse 19, Matthew writes this, what Jesus says. Jesus says, don't store up treasures here on earth, where moths eat them and rust destroys them, and where thieves break in and steal. Don't invest in the things of this world that are fading quicker than what you are. Things that don't matter. Things that will ultimately fade away and the shine of them will wear off. Things that will not provide the fulfillment that you're looking for. Don't invest in those things, but find a way to invest in the things that matter, that pay a dividend that will last for eternity. See, the tension that exists is that society leads us to believe that investments are all about me. It's the tension that all of us fight when it comes to the way in which we invest our time and the way in which we invest our money. Society wants you to believe that investments are all about you, all about your future. And yet, what if I told you that that was only half true? Sure, investments are about you, but investments are also about far more than you. But if we simply focus on the half-truth that my investments are all about me, all about my present, all about my future, what it leads us to is to begin to live our lives under what's called a scarcity mindset. My life is all about me, and I will only be fulfilled when I have enough. And guess what? I don't know if you knew this or not, but I never have enough. When I live under that mindset, I will never have enough. So we live our lives constantly trying to store up more for me. When really the way in which we were intended, designed to invest with our time and with our money, was in a completely different way. Because what I believe is that the way you were designed and the way I was designed to invest was a whole lot more like this. That God created you and God created me to pour, not store. the reason why Luke, when looking back over what the God of the universe, when he put on flesh and stepped onto the pages of history, what he said, why Luke felt as if it was imperative to remind us of this truth. In Acts chapter 20, Luke writes, "You should remember the words of the Lord Jesus. It is more blessed," or if you like the King James words, "it is more blessed to give than to receive." Do you realize what this means, y'all? Our investments, with our time, with our money, are about something for us, not something from us. There is more blessing involved in us giving, in us pouring, than there is in us storing, in us getting. Isn't that incredible? There is something better that lies on the other side of us pouring instead of on the other side of us storing in our lives. You see, Jesus established this upside-down kingdom that doesn't make sense until you do it. This upside-down kingdom that wanted something better for your life, if you will just jump in and try what nobody else is trying, if you'll just have the courage to say, "I'm in," when nobody is saying, "I'm in." And that's a message we will never hear from the society around us. And yet what I want you and I to fully understand is that we are missing out on so much more for our lives when we live under the belief system that our investments are simply about getting more for me. But there's good news in this whole dynamic. Good news in this struggle that exists inside of every single one of us when deciding what to invest in. And the good news is this. Is that deep inside of every single one of us as humanity, there is a craving, a desire to give. And all of us have experienced this in our lives. As much as we fight it, in the moments of our lives in which we give to a need, it feels good. We actually enjoy it, right? Knowing that we're helping, knowing that we're doing something that makes a difference. There is something inside of us that's satisfied through the act of generosity. And the reason why I believe that's there is because it is literally a part of our DNA. Why do I say that? Because we, you and I, were created in the image of God. A God who by his nature is generous. Why do I say that? Because he is a perfect God who continues to provide for an imperfect me, despite my mess ups. My brokenness in my life, he continually generously gives to me. And we see it within our DNA at the very beginning of time. Within the very first human being placed on this earth, we see that part of our DNA come out, come to fruition. The story of Adam, the very first man on this earth. He gave a piece of himself for the betterment and formation of another human being. It was a part of us from the very beginning to give something that was ours to help somebody else. That is what we were designed to do. We were created to pour, not just to store for me. On the flip side, there's also bad news. The bad news is that fighting against that generous gene that exists inside of every single one of us is what I like to call the one pie mindset. Maybe I call it the one pie mindset because I really love pie and I like to think about pie as much as I can. But for me, the one pie mindset looks like this, and maybe you can relate. That we believe with our lives we have been given one pie. And if I give a piece of my pie to somebody else, there is this fear that rises up inside of me that maybe there won't be enough pie for me. And y'all, that's bad news. That maybe by the end of all of this, I won't get as much pie as what I want to have. And so instead of sharing a piece of my pie with someone else who might need it, we begin to live under this scarcity mindset of, I need to make sure I'll have enough pie at the end. And the scarcity mindset then leads to a win-then strategy when it comes to our finances. When I have more, when I have enough, then I'll be generous. Then I'll start to give. Except I don't know if y'all have realized this, it's probably just me. I never have enough. That by the time I reach the goal of that win, W-H-E-N, when I get to this level, then I'll be generous. By the time I reach that finish line, guess what? The finish line has already moved. And the win in my life went from here, and now that I got close, it was like, no. I need to get here to be comfortable, to have enough for me, to begin to give and be generous. And I never have enough. And what that means is the then never comes to fruition in my life with my investments. The problem is that we always need just a little bit more for me under the scarcity mindset. I need just a little bit more. And so what do? We store, and we store, and we store. It's like this parable that Jesus told a couple thousand years ago when the God of the universe stepped onto the pages of history. He garnered a following. People clung to his words because what they were experiencing within their Jewish religious system was a group of religious leaders who consistently spoke over their heads. Made them feel as if they weren't smart enough, not good enough. You're broken, that's all you need to know. You'll never be good enough, and you will never be as good as us. And then here came this rabbi, teacher, maybe even the Messiah that we've been waiting for. It feels like he's talking directly to me. He's speaking so that I can understand it, telling stories, parables, that relate to my everyday life. And as you can imagine, by the thousands, people flocked to hear what he had to say and how he would speak into their lives, how he would reach out a hand to them and accept them just where they were, love them just as they were, leave the 99 to go after the one. And one of these such days in which he had garnered a following, as thousands of people were listening to him speak, Jesus told this story about our investments. In Luke chapter 12, starting in verse 16, it'll come up on the screen for you, or you can also crack open your weekly that you got when you walked in and follow along with us. But here's how the story goes. He, meaning Jesus, told them this parable. The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. He thought to himself, "What shall I do? I have no place to store my crops." Now, if I can here, just for 30 seconds, I feel as if it's appropriate to stop. And maybe it's only appropriate for me again. But when I read a passage like this, a story like this from Jesus, my mind immediately drifts in this direction. In that first line, Jesus begins to tell a story about, what does he classify him as? A rich man. And what I immediately begin to think is, well, this story doesn't really apply to me. Because I am not rich, right? Anybody else out there with me? He must not be talking to me. He must be talking about the people who have more than what I have, who have enough, and I don't have enough yet. And yet, what if I told you that by walking into this room, by the world's standards, you are rich? That for all of us in this room, most likely we find ourselves in the top 5% of wealth in the world. No matter how young, old you are, what socioeconomic demographic you find yourself falling into, you are rich. Because of that, Jesus' words 2,000 years ago are speaking directly into my life and your life, my choices and your choices. He continues. Then he said, "Aha, light bulb moment, I've got a grand idea. This is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and there I will," and he uses the word, "store my surplus grain. I'll make an investment with what I have, and my investment will be all about me, all about my future. I will invest in bigger barns so that I can spend my life storing and storing and storing." And if you read the next two verses in this parable that Jesus tells, it says that the rich farmer made this determination, that I can sit back, drink, and be merry for the rest of my life. If I build bigger barns and I store, I won't have to do anything. Is that really the investment we want to make with our lives and our futures? To be so comfortable that the only person that benefits is me? Is that the way we've been created? Does that fulfill the desire that lives deep inside of us, the part of our DNA that we've been created with that screams for generosity? But with this man's decision, of his investment, this is how God responds. But God said to him, "You fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself?" And you could fill in the blank here. For yourself only. This is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves, but is not rich towards God. See, this kind of investment screams scarcity mindset. That my life is all about me and all about me having enough. And yet, do you know where that scarcity mindset that battles deep inside of all of us is birthed from? Fear. Do you know what the scarcity mindset is fed by? One thing and one thing only. Fear. Fear that I'll never have enough. A fear that I will never make it, a fear that it will run out. And our enemy wants us to focus on that fear and keep us from living the best life possible. He wants us to focus on that fear and miss out the blessing of generosity. But we have an opportunity to fight back against that scarcity mindset, to fight back against that fear that is grappling, to pull us back, to chain us to our past, to chain us to believing we'll never have enough and we need to keep it to ourselves. And do you know what our tool to fight back is? An abundance mindset. You know what an abundance mindset says? I am following a God who holds the world in his hands, a God who always has enough. A God who is the maker of pies. He has provided for me in my past, and I trust he will provide for me in my future. An abundance mindset returns us back to the place where we can believe God is who he says he is and will do what he has promised to do. If my God is good enough to forgive me, he's powerful enough to provide for me. Y'all okay? If my God is good enough to forgive me, he's powerful enough to provide for me. He's provided for me before. I believe he will provide for me again. And the abundance mindset chooses to see that we have a God who provides, but we have a God who is way more than just a provider. A couple thousand years ago, in one of those such instances that I just talked about, Jesus had garnered a following on the hillside one day. In fact, in this particular instance, they actually documented the amount of, well, just men who had followed and were listening to Jesus on that day. There were 5,000 men as him and his disciples traveled to a town called Bethsaida. As Jesus began to talk, scholars believe that as it's documented, there were 5,000 men, but most likely there were somewhere between 10 and 15,000 women and children, in addition to those men on that day that Jesus was talking. Between 15 and 20,000 people had gathered to listen to Jesus talk on this one day. And with that giant crowd that was sitting there listening, on this day, Jesus was on a roll, y'all. He had all these drop the mic moments, and Jesus was preaching a message that was like a 43-point message. Y'all, it just kept going. You think I'm long? Good thing you were not there on that day. But as the day wore on, you can just imagine with me. The disciples, right? Most likely John or Peter, one of the leaders, huddled up the disciples. The disciples were beginning to get tired, bored, and their stomachs were grumbling. And they gathered the disciples together, and they're like, "Guys, aren't you hungry?" And everybody's like, "I know. I thought he was going to be done like 4 hours ago." And they thought, "Well, what can we do? What can we do to get ourselves something to eat in this moment?" And so John, Peter, one of the leaders, concocted this brilliant plan. "Hey, what if we get one of the lesser known? Hey, Barty!" Bartholomew, no one knows him. "Hey, Barty, we got a job for you, bud. why don't you go to Jesus and tell him we're getting hungry and he needs to stop? And Barty's like, no one may know who I am, but guys, I ain't that dumb. I'm not going to the Savior of the world and telling him, I'm hungry, could you please stop what you're saying? And so they're like, all right, we need a better plan. How about this? He seems to really care for all these people that he's talking to. And so what if we flip the script, and what if we told Jesus, they're all hungry, they're all tired, they need something to eat. You need to send them away so that they can find something to eat and somewhere to sleep. And so they're like, brilliant plan. Let's go for it. We pick this up in Luke chapter 9, starting in verse 12. Late in the afternoon, some translations, just so you all know, I'm not leading you astray and I'm telling you, some translations say, as the day wore on, the 12 disciples came to him and said, send the crowds away to the nearby villages and farms so they can find food and lodging for the night. There is nothing for them to eat here in this remote place. And so they begin to pull this off, and they go to Jesus, and they're like, all these people, you got like 15 to 20,000 people here, they're hungry, they're tired, they need something to eat. If you really care for them, you'll send them away so that they can be fed and so that they can get some rest. And Jesus turns to his disciples, and this is his response. But Jesus said, you feed them. And you can just imagine with me all, right? Like the other 10 disciples looked at the two who had concocted this brilliant plan with sideways looks, and they're like, this ain't going the way we drew it up. Like, Jesus, do you remember what you called us from? We were fishermen. We were poor then, and then you called us from our occupations to follow you and to fish for men. Now we have absolutely nothing. Where are we going to find food for them, and how are we going to pay for this food? There ain't no way this is going to be able to happen. But they decide, you know what? I mean, there are 10 to 15,000 women and children. Moms, you are phenomenal planners, right? You don't go anywhere without a plan. Maybe if we go out into the crowd, we can find a bunch of people who have packed some lunches, and we can split that up, and we can find something for everybody to eat. But as they went out into the crowd, what they found were people who are so desperate to catch a glimpse, to hear a word from the Messiah, that they left everything behind to come to the hillside just to see him for a moment, and were captivated by the 43-point message, the six-hour sermon that he was on. And they found one boy who had five loaves and two fishes. And they brought this one lunch back to Jesus. Not enough to give away. Not enough to be generous with. But what happened next changed the scarcity mindset, or should, in all of us. Jesus took the five loaves and two fish. He looked up toward heaven and blessed them. Then, breaking the loaves into pieces, he kept giving the bread and fish to the disciples so they could distribute it to the people. And y'all, give me grace. I can just imagine Thomas, the doubting one. Like, he was given that first basket and went to the first person. Thomas was like, take a very small piece. There is not enough to go around, y'all. But then this is what happened. They all ate as much as they wanted. And afterwards, this is probably my favorite part of the story. Afterward, the disciples picked up 12 baskets of leftovers. You're like, Ben, why is that your favorite part of the story? There are 12 disciples. It was like in this moment, God was providing one reminder for each of the disciples of who he is. On that day, Jesus blessed it, the disciples gave it, but then God multiplied it. You see, God is more than just a provider. When we're willing to invest in the right things in the kingdom, when we store, we're only capable of seeing him as a giver. But when we give, when we pour, we also get to see him as a multiplier. You see, what you keep is all you have, but what you give, God multiplies. You weren't meant to just be a container. You were created to be a funnel. And as I read this story, y'all, what I don't find within this passage, within this moment, is this reality that when Jesus blessed the food, all of a sudden they turned around on the hillside. It was like Golden Corral. All the food is there for all the 15 to 20,000 people. Now, you know what happened? The multiplication only took place as the pouring was happening. As the disciples gave, more was multiplied. It was like they turned around and Jesus just had one basket. And by the time they gave the one basket away, they turned around and Jesus had one more basket for them. And they turned around and they gave it away and Jesus had one more basket for them. And it was like the baskets were just coming out of nowhere. You see, the multiplication was dependent upon the pouring. It didn't give the opportunity for a win-then strategy. It only came to fruition as the disciples were willing to give, as the disciples were willing to pour. It just kept being multiplied. The God who is a multiplier put on display what the world had never seen, this upside-down kingdom that didn't make sense. Until you try it. Until you do it. I believe with all of my heart that as Christ followers, we are called to lead the way with irrational generosity. I believe with all of my heart, wholeheartedly, that we as the church are called to lead the way with irrational generosity. It's the reason why we as a leadership team here at Core Community Church made this decision years ago. That as a church, the first 10% of our income every single year will go directly to community and global impact initiatives. We give it away. We pour. We give it away because that is what we have been called to do as Christ followers and as the body of Christ, as the local church that is the hope of the world, living and preaching the hope of Jesus Christ. And yet what I also recognize is that one of the reasons why I'm so passionate about this is because when I look inside of myself, what I recognize is that this is a battle I fight within every single day. That when it comes to the fear that lives inside of me as it pertains to finances, there is a battle of fear that is raging inside of me. Not just as it pertains to the way in which I co-manage and co-lead the finances for our family with Krista, but also the way in which I lead us organizationally as Core Community Church into the stewardship of what y'all, with your generosity, have entrusted us to do for our city and for our world. And what I can say beyond a doubt, y'all, is that over the course of the last 8.5 years, there has not been a season, maybe season number one, like within those first few months that I came to Core, but no other season from then until now in which fear has had an opportunity to have a stronger foothold when it comes to our finances than right now. Because some of y'all may not know this, but we've made this declaration months ago that as a church, we were pushing our chips to the middle for our city and our world. And we were going all in. And we were doing some things that didn't make sense for a church our size. And we were going to purchase a facility that was 37,000 square feet for the sole needs of opening a community outreach center that was focused on just meeting the needs and being a hand up instead of a hand out to our city and to our world. And we were going to pour ourselves into that, and we didn't know how it was going to work. Churches of 300 and some odd people don't launch dream centers like we're doing because it doesn't make financial sense. And yet if it all came crumbling down, we wanted to know we've at least pushed our chips to the middle for an investment that matters and come up short than to have never tried at all. And I was reminded of this fear that grapples inside of me over the course of the last month. You see, we have a thing that we do around here. We've done it every year for the last 5 years. And we invest in one global impact initiative that provides over 35,000 meals to homeless and needy people from our budget that we pack in one day. We spend a little over 3% of our annual operating budget just on this one day. And you guys want to know the truth? As a man before I was a pastor, give me grace. Everything inside of me in this season is screaming, maybe this is a good time to just say, not this year. Maybe this is a season to make sure we're going to be okay, to make sure we're going to make it, to play it safe. And yet it was like in this moment as I was preparing for today, I got God's one-handed clap. You know what that is? We were created to pour, not store. Are you really going to hedge on your bet to push your chips to the middle this early when the going gets tough that you're going to make your investment all about you? That you're going to say we're pushing all of our chips to the middle, but you're going to keep some hidden behind your back to make sure that you're all right? Or are you going to look at me with an abundance mindset and see that I'm a God who didn't fail you before and I'm not going to fail you now? To be a leader that's willing to push the chips to the middle, and if it goes down, at least we've gone down swinging, y'all. I can do the drive-thru at McDonald's. We were meant to lead the way with irrational generosity. I was meant to lead the way with irrational generosity. You were meant to lead the way with irrational generosity. But I get it. In the world in which we live, it doesn't make sense. We don't get that message from anyone else. Everybody else, our financial advisors, our friends, the rich people we know are saying, invest in you. We're like, how do I trust it? How do I know that this will be worth it? And this is what we get from God. In the last book of the Old Testament, God begins talking about this tithe, this concept of the first 10% of what you get, to give it back out, to pour it into the world around you, to pour it into the mission of the kingdom. But then he gives this incredible statement that has the potential to change everything. In Malachi chapter 3, verse 10, it says this, "Bring the whole tithe into the storehouse, that there may be food in my house." And then he says this, "Test me in this, says the Lord Almighty, and see if I will not throw open the floodgates of heaven and pour out so much blessing that there will not be room enough to store it." You can't understand the upside down kingdom until you try it. And God says, just try me. Just test me on this. And see if I'm not a God who wants something for you, not something from you. I want you to experience better. And I know it seems crazy, but I'm not crazy. I'm a God who holds the world in my hands. I provided for you before, and I will provide for you again. You want to see a God of the multiplication? Be a person who's a pourer, who's a funnel, not a container. What I believe with all of my heart is that there is nothing in this world that you can invest in that will pay a return on investment that reverberates throughout all of eternity like an investment in the kingdom. There is no investment that can compare. And you see, in light of this war that rages inside of me, I can't speak for my wife, but this war of fear that rages inside of me, Krista and I made this decision personally years ago. We said there's a way in which, like for us, we determined as a family, like we wanted the tithe to be our minimum standard. And we lived by that for a lot of years. I can remember back to getting my first paychecks in ministry. I was getting paychecks of $987 twice a month. And we were writing a check, every single paycheck for $99. And it hurt, y'all. It hurt. And yet what we recognized is that over time, the way in which we fight back with this abundance mindset is that we needed to make a decision that if the local church was going to become ours and we were going to invest in it and believe in it and pour ourselves into the mission of it, that for us personally, the only way we could fight back against the fear that exists around our finances is to fight back with increase. So we said we're going to become one percenters. And every single year, we started at 10. Every new calendar year, we're going to increase by a percent. And that's going to go to 11 and 12 and 13. And here we sit at 18. And every year, the fear rises back to the surface. Like, I think 18 is good. You don't need to go to 19. You're good. And yet, I want to live by a different mindset. I want to live investing in something that matters with my life and pushing my chip to the middle. And y'all, the stories that I love to hear and I love to be a part of is when families' terminologies change. And it changes from, I love your church or I love that pastor's church to I love my church. Because I'm investing in it. Because I'm giving of my time, of my finances to invest in something that matters. Something that will outlast me. Something that will reverberate throughout eternity. There's one thing that's holding us back. One thing that holds every single one of us back from saying, I'm invited. I'm invaluable. I'm influential. I'm invested. That one thing is fear. A fear that for far too long we've allowed to dictate our lives, to dictate our futures, to keep us from God's best, to keep us from experiencing this upside down kingdom that doesn't make sense, but an upside down kingdom that changes our lives. And what if today was the day you say goodbye, fear? You're not my future. You will not dictate my future anymore. I have a God who holds the world in his hands, who has provided in my past and I believe will provide in my future. And I will no longer live with my time or my money with a scarcity mindset. I have a God who is the maker of pies and I can give away some pieces. But experiencing God's best always lies on the other side of I'm in. Fighting back against fear always lies on the other side of I'm in. So the question is this. For me, for you, am I courageous enough to say, I'm in? Fear, you are not my future anymore. I have a God who's bigger than that and speaks something better over me and over you. Would you pray with me? Father, this morning, it seems like every single week we come back to this same place, and yet it's such a fitting place. What can we say but thank you? Thank you for being a God who is bigger than our fears. A God who wants something for us, not something from us. Who invites us to more. Who sees us as invaluable, who wants us to be influential, and who knows the value of our investment, no matter how small or how big it looks to us, that you have called us to say, I'm in. From this day forward, to change my life, to change my future, and to change the trajectory of my faith. God, on this day, we speak with courage. Fear, you will not hold me back for one more day. You are not my future.